Welcome to the Western Yoga Podcast. My name is Christopher Sartain, your host. It's a beautiful day here in the Southern Andes Mountains in our small ashram in Southern Chile. This episode will be the first of a series of episodes about the Gospel of Thomas. In this episode, I will present some basic history of the Gospel of Thomas, and in future episodes, I will explore some of my favorite verses from the Gospel of Thomas and expound on those teachings and relate those teachings to the yoga tradition. I first read the Gospel of Thomas in about 2010, 2011, about 12 years ago, something like that. And it really opened my eyes. Up to that point, I had more or less rejected my Christian upbringing and the Christian Protestant church that I attended as a youth. With my family, I was brought up in a Southern Baptist church in rural Georgia, and I never bought into the dogma or the belief system of that church. I can remember being 10 years old, sitting there listening to the preacher talk about how non-believers, those who were not saved and baptized, would burn in hell for all of eternity. And even at that age, I had some understanding of the small percentage of human beings on planet Earth that had been saved and baptized. And I thought to myself, well, they've been telling me this whole time that God is a loving God. How could he possibly send the overwhelming majority of his children to hell for all of eternity, to burn and suffer for all of eternity? And I never bought into it. And I never bought into heaven and hell as actual places either. I can remember being 9, 10, 11 years old and just thinking this is nonsense. And so at a very early age, 13 or 14 years old, I began reading Taoist texts, Buddhist texts, actual texts, and also books about Buddhism, books about Taoism. And I stopped attending the church, the Southern Baptist Church, with my family at around age 14 or 15. I don't remember exactly. It was not a popular decision. And, of course, created a lot of conflict, familial conflict, which is now more or less resolved, I would say. I have a good relationship with my parents and family and all of that, although they continue to be Protestant Christians and adhere to that belief system. And that's fine. We just don't talk about religion or beliefs when we're together, and there's really no issue. At any rate, in 2010, 2011, somewhere around that time, I read the Gospel of Thomas for the first time and realized that Christ was, in fact, an enlightened master, similar to the Buddha or the gurus of my Kriya Yoga tradition and other traditions from India, other lineages of enlightened gurus. And there's so many parallels to be drawn between the teachings of Jesus in the Gospel of Thomas and the teachings of the Buddha and the yoga teachings. Any genuine, authentic enlightenment tradition will have very similar teachings. So at that time, I returned, so to say, to my Christian roots from a completely different perspective, from a completely different point of view, and saw Jesus as an enlightened master who had become enlightened, who had become fully awake. And he taught the teachings of enlightenment and liberation of consciousness to his disciples. The Gospel of Thomas, so-called because it was written by Thomas, or probably a scribe, because we think Thomas was most likely illiterate, and so he probably had someone write this down for him, but it was definitely written by Thomas. Probably, in my opinion, based on my research, and you should do your own research, most likely 30, 40, 50 years after Jesus' death, the original version. I'm not going to go too deeply into the history. You can do your own research on that. But essentially, it was originally written in one language and then translated, just like all of the texts are. Okay? But the very earliest version, we think, was probably written 30 years after Jesus' death, approximately. Meaning that it is older than the earliest gospel, which is Mark. And so it's really the earliest gospel, the first gospel. Although it was not really called a gospel when it was written. But at any rate, it predates Mark, Matthew, Luke, John, all the four canonical gospels, so-called. And of course, the Gospel of Thomas is not included in the Bible. Unfortunately, it was removed at one of the councils. Not sure if it was the Council of Nicaea. It was one of these councils, they decided not to include it, along with many other so-called Gnostic texts. Now, the Gospel of Thomas is not a Gnostic gospel. It is not a Gnostic text. There's a lot of confusion about that. It always gets included into these gospels, Gnostic gospels, so-called. It was written prior to that. It was written before Gnosticism was even a thing, before the concept really existed, Gnosticism or Gnostic Christianity. It predates all of that. Now, the Gnostics used it, and they liked it, and they read it, and they studied it. But it predates that whole movement of Gnostic Christianity or Gnosticism by a couple hundred years. Okay, so this is Jesus' earliest teachings. These are the original teachings or sayings of Jesus Christ. This is the original stuff, the purest, clearest teachings that Jesus ever gave. Many of the verses in the Gospel of Thomas are included in the other Gospels, but that's because they have, they come from the same source material, the so-called Q material. Okay? You can do your own research into the Q material, so-called. But essentially, it is the original source writings that the Gospels were based on, that the Gospels used in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Okay? But the Gospel of Thomas predates those other Gospels, and so it is the original Q material. Now, there were later additions to the Gospel of Thomas, so it's hard to know exactly which verses are the original verses from the Q material and which verses were added later on, 100 years later. It's difficult to know, okay? But we can infer that the teachings that deal with enlightenment and non-dualism are the pure original teachings of Jesus, the enlightened teachings of Jesus, okay? And so let me read something here from this wonderful book that I also recommend that you read, from Helmut Koester. I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. If you go on YouTube, you can find a couple of videos with him talking. And the title of this book, it's one of my favorite books, is called Ancient Christian Gospels, Their History and Development, by Helmut Koester, or Kaster, not sure how you pronounce his name, okay? But this is a dense academic scholarly book, and it's not easy to get through. It's not an easy read. It's not reader-friendly, user-friendly. It takes a lot of concentration and diligence and perseverance to get through this book. But this man was a genius, an academic genius, a true scholar. And I'm a big fan of his work. I'm a big fan of this book. I believe he did more research into the origins of the Gospel of Thomas and the true history of the Gospel of Thomas than any other scholar. Now, if you go on the internet or if you read other books about the Gospel of Thomas, for the most part, they are written by Christian apologists. What does that mean? That means that they try to debunk the idea that the Gospel of Thomas was written prior to the other Gospels. Even though there's ample evidence laid out in this book, okay? Undeniable, irrefutable evidence, okay? But just for you to know, if you get into this topic, if you get into this theme of the Gospel of Thomas, you will find a lot of naysayers and a lot of debunkers, but they're all Christian apologists, completely biased and prejudiced. And they only search for things that confirm their prejudice and their bias. So it's confirmation bias, okay? They're not thinking objectively. They're conditioned and programmed to think a certain way and believe certain things, and they're unable to think clearly. They do not possess the ability or capacity to think objectively and clearly. But this man does, Helmut Koester. Okay, so I highly recommend reading this book. And his scholarship is impeccable. And it's hard to refute anything, any of his research into the Gospel of Thomas that you find in this book. Okay? So let me read something here. This is on page 150. He says, "The close relationships of the Gospel of Thomas to Q cannot be accidental, since the typical Son of Man sayings and announcements of judgments, which are characteristic of the redaction of Q, meaning the later version, the editing that occurred in the Q material later on, not the original Q material, since the typical Son of Man sayings and announcements of judgments, which are characteristic of the redaction of Q, are never paralleled in the Gospel of Thomas, it is evident that its author had no knowledge of the final version of Q, meaning the redacted version, nor of the secondary apocalyptic interpretation that the redactor of Q superimposed upon earlier eschatological sayings. The Gospel of Thomas is either dependent upon Q's earlier version or upon clusters of sayings employed in its composition. That really says it all. Okay? That tells you everything you need to know about the Gospel of Thomas. And again, you should do your own research. It's complicated, it's complex, but essentially, what he's saying here is that the Gospel of Thomas is the pure, original Q teachings before they were corrupted and edited, and the so-called apocalyptic and judgments and all of this was added to the redacted Q version. Okay, so the Gospel of Thomas is dependent upon Q's earlier version, meaning the earliest written teachings of Jesus. The earliest written teachings of Jesus. The Gospel of Thomas is the earliest written teachings of Jesus, period. Do your own research, but I've done a tremendous amount of research since I first read the Gospel of Thomas in 2010, 12 years ago. I've read everything I could possibly find on the Gospel of Thomas, even the Christian apologists' writings. I've read all of it. And most of their arguments are absurd, for the most part. There's a few scholars out there that are tricky and crafty, and they know how to craft a good counter-argument. But for the most part, most of their arguments are not based in reality. They're their subjective, biased, prejudiced opinions rather than factual. They don't follow the evidence, in other words. Okay? So, this book proves, beyond the shadow of any doubt, that the Gospel of Thomas is based upon the oldest Q writings. Therefore, it is the purest collection of Jesus' original teachings. Even purer than that, than the teachings we find in Mark, which are also pretty good. Okay? The later Gospels, Matthew, Luke, and John, have been highly edited, highly corrupted, and were written much later. Okay, Mark, we think, was probably written 40 years after Jesus' death, maybe? Okay? But the Gospel of Thomas is even older than that, and it's based on the earliest Q writings. Some of Mark is based on the later redacted and edited Q material, okay? That has a lot to do with judgment and the so-called apocalyptic teachings, okay? These were not Jesus' original teachings. A lot of this was based upon Paul's interpretation of Jesus. Paul, by the way, never knew Jesus, never met Jesus, never spoke to Jesus, supposedly had a vision of Jesus. You know, how do you prove that? It's interesting because modern Christians will tell you that anyone that claims to be channeling Jesus is a charlatan and full of it. Yet they base their entire religion on the channeled teachings of Jesus via Paul, the Apostle Paul. Okay? This is obviously logically incoherent. Personally, I'm not a fan of Paul. And I think he was a charlatan, and that he was making things up, and he was sort of a cult leader during his time, and an egomaniac, sort of a megalomaniac, egomaniac, cult leader type of a figure, sort of an antichrist, as it were. And he greatly corrupted Jesus's original teachings, early teachings that we find in the Gospel of Thomas. Okay? So, the Gospel of Thomas was written by, it says in the text, Didymus Judas Thomas. And by the way, there are many translations of the Gospel of Thomas out there. I typically use the Thomas O. Lambden translation. I find it to be the most accurate, although there are some words that I disagree with here and there. There are no perfect translations of the Gospel of Thomas, but I do enjoy his translation more than any of the others. There are some good websites out there that have several different translations for free on the websites, and you can easily compare and contrast these different translations. But I've read all of them, and I really enjoy Thomas O. Lambden's translation. Okay? So that's the one that I'll be using in this series of podcasts, in this series of talks. So Didymus Judas Thomas basically means Jesus' twin. Now, he was not Jesus' brother. Okay? But he was Jesus' spiritual twin. Okay? Because he was Jesus' most advanced disciple. And Jesus taught him the most esoteric teachings. Jesus taught other teachings to other disciples that were more exoteric or more for the masses. Okay? But what Jesus taught Thomas were the more esoteric, deep, sort of metaphysical, advanced enlightenment teachings, which is what Thomas wrote down, or he had someone, had a scribe write down for him. Okay? Now, there's a lot of evidence that Thomas went to India after Jesus' death, that he traveled all the way to India and even died in India. I won't go into that history. You should do your own research into it, but there's ample evidence that Thomas did venture all the way to India and ultimately died there, and that he was the sort of father of the Eastern Christian tradition in Syria and Egypt and India. Okay? Which is a more esoteric, Gnostic form of Christianity, okay, that developed in the East. Now, you might ask, your podcast is called the Western Yoga Podcast. Why are you discussing Christianity or the Gospel of Thomas? Because it has nothing to do with yoga. Well, in fact, it does have a lot to do with yoga. What is taught in the Gospel of Thomas is yoga, is samadhi, is non-dual consciousness, is enlightenment. And reading the Gospel of Thomas is very similar to reading a text by Shankara or Zen Buddhism. It's non-duality. Advaita Vedanta. It is an enlightened text. Okay, so it is yoga. It is yoga. And in fact, Israel is not the West per se. It depends on what you consider the West, but Christianity obviously went on to influence the Western world more than any other religion or spiritual tradition. But if we trace it back to its roots, it was in fact an Enlightenment tradition. And there was a sort of lineage of gurus. John the Baptist was essentially Jesus's guru. And they lived in a community called the Essenes. We think they were Essenes or something similar. That these communities existed around Qumran. Well, they existed in various parts of Israel, but essentially they were yogis. Okay? They ate a mostly vegetarian diet. They practiced ritual bathing. And they meditated and prayed and fasted and did all of the ascetic spiritual practices that yogis do. So these were groups of monks, basically, celibate monks living in the desert in small communities, practicing meditation, prayer, fasting, ritual bathing, purification. These were groups of yogis. And John the Baptist was essentially Jesus's teacher, his guru. Prior to Jesus in the Jewish tradition, the Jewish world, the prophets and teachers were paramount. And so Jesus comes out of that tradition. We must understand this. Teachers and prophets were paramount in ancient Judaism, in ancient Israel. They were incredibly important and highly valued. And so Jesus comes out of that tradition of the prophets and the teachers, the spiritual teachers. And so John the Baptist was his spiritual teacher, his guru, so to say. Okay? And then Jesus was a guru who had many disciples. Of course, we talk about his 12 disciples, but probably that has a lot to do with astrological themes that I won't go into, the number 12 and all of that. But at any rate, he did have disciples, and he was a guru. And so he was initiated, the Essenes, or that tradition was an initiatory tradition. Sort of a mystery school, so to say. And Jesus was initiated by John the Baptist. And then Jesus initiated his disciples. Okay? This was an initiatory tradition, a lineage of masters. And Jesus was John the Baptist's highest disciple, and Thomas was Jesus's highest disciple. Okay? That's why he is called the twin. He was Jesus's twin, not his physical twin, his spiritual twin, because he had achieved also, or unveiled, let's say, this Christ consciousness, this enlightened consciousness. Okay? In the Gospel of Thomas, there is no emphasis on Jesus's life. There's no biography or on his death or resurrection, no mention of that. Just as actual esoteric teachings, because that's what he wanted people to know about. That's what was important to him, the teachings, enlightenment, liberation, non-dual consciousness, permanent and lasting peace, nirvana. That's what he wanted to get across. That's what he taught Thomas, and that's what Thomas taught others. And that's what he wrote down. So this is similar to the idea that Yogananda taught about quality teachings versus quantity teachings. Now, the quantity teachings are for the masses. Not everyone has the intellectual and spiritual capacities to grasp the deeper esoteric teachings. So Yogananda had many teachings that he gave to the masses, and he used certain words and certain language that he did not use with his highest disciples. Okay? I am a disciple of one of his highest disciples, Roy Eugene Davis. Okay? And I know from talking to Mr. Davis that Yogananda used certain words when he was in public in a big gatherings, but then he used very different words when he was talking with his close disciples, his inner circle of advanced disciples. Jesus did the same thing. And so what we have here in the Gospel of Thomas are the quality teachings, quantity versus quality. These are the quality teachings. These were reserved only for Jesus's highest disciples. He transmitted these teachings directly to Thomas, his highest, most advanced disciple. Okay? So this sort of teacher-disciple, guru-disciple relationship that was established in the ancient Essene communities and similar communities was passed on to the so-called Abbas, or the desert father tradition, these monks that lived in the deserts of Egypt, the original Christian monks, so-called Abbas, or desert fathers. They were part of this original tradition of teacher and disciple, and they carried on these enlightenment teachings and experienced very high levels and stages of enlightenment. So these were these advanced disciples carried on this original Christianity, the original teachings of Jesus, found in the Gospel of Thomas and the original Q material, the esoteric, advanced teachings of Jesus. Okay? So, these are the Enlightenment teachings, the so-called Gnostic teachings, although Gnosticism is again a separate school of thought that formed much later, and they have their own belief system that is not found in the Gospel of Thomas, is not found in Jesus' original teachings, okay? But it's sort of the salvationism versus enlightenment debate that occurred sort of between James, Jesus's brother, and Thomas and other disciples that knew Jesus, that met Jesus, knew him personally, and Paul, who never met Jesus, and invented his own version of Christianity to suit his own needs and to sort of appease Roman officials and all of this. It's complicated. I won't go into that history. But essentially, Paul co-opted and corrupted Christianity, the original Christianity. That's why he had these conflicts with James and the other disciples, because they knew that what Paul was teaching was bunk, okay? And they knew what Jesus had actually taught, because they lived with him. They were around him all the time. Paul was not. So what many modern Christians practice is not Christianity. It's Paulinity. 99% of Christians on planet Earth are practicing Paulinity. They're not really practicing Christianity. Okay? So that's some basic history. That's some basic history of the Gospel of Thomas. These are the original Christian mystic teachings, mystical Christianity, esoteric Christianity. Now, typically, the Gospel of Thomas is not considered a mystical Christian text because when we talk about the Christian mystics, typically we're talking about people like Meister Eckhart, Teresa of Avila, and others that are associated with Christian mysticism, okay, that occurred much, much later. They were not even privy to this text at that time. They did not have access to the Gospel of Thomas because it was lost for hundreds of years until it was rediscovered, okay, really within the last 100 years, okay? So these Christian mystics, so-called, did not have access to this text, unfortunately, okay? So we cannot call the Gospel of Thomas a mystical Christian text necessarily. Because when we use that terminology, we're talking about a later movement, okay, of Christian mystics. Saint Francis of Assisi, Teresa of Avila, and Meister Eckhart, so on and so forth. And I love all of those teachings also. And I've read very widely most of the popular works of Christian mysticism. And I'm a big fan of those texts. But we shouldn't confuse the Gospel of Thomas with that later movement. The Gospel of Thomas is the original, these are the original mystical, esoteric, enlightened teachings of Yeshua, of Jesus, okay? And the word Christ, by the way, is interesting. It essentially means someone who has been anointed by the sacred oil. Now, the Essenes and other Jewish sects practiced anointing the head of initiates with oil, okay? This was an outer act, a symbolic act of the internal secretion of soma nectar in the brain. In the Indian tradition, we call this soma or amrita. And this is the sacred oil, so-called, that is produced in the brain in superconscious states. This nectar is produced in the brain, and it mixes with the saliva in the mouth, and you can swallow it, and it converts into amrita or ambrosia in the rest of the body, and it's regenerative and healing. And you can feel it flowing through the body, in every cell of the body, and it produces a sort of subtle ecstasy that you can feel in every cell of the body, and it's regenerative and nourishing. And it's a vital part of the Kundalini awakening process. And once awakened, the brain produces this soma nectar, and it is partly responsible for many of the important changes that occur in the brain, in the nervous system, in the chakras, in the nadis, etc. So the production of soma and the swallowing of soma, the drinking of soma nectar, which Christ talks about in the Gospel of Thomas, and I'll get into that in later episodes. He directly speaks on soma and drinking of soma. When we do this, it creates important changes in the body, the subtle body, that facilitate enlightened states of consciousness and higher stages of awakening. And so Christ means someone who has been anointed by the sacred oil. We're not talking here about olive oil or any other kind of oil, physical oil. This is the superficial, shallow interpretation of the meaning of oil. What they're actually referring to is the esoteric, mystical teaching about soma and the sacred oil that the brain produces and that we swallow and drink as we awaken. Okay? I think that's a good stopping place for today, for this episode. Please subscribe to this podcast and share it with others. And I look forward to continuing this series on the wonderful Christian text, the Gospel of Thomas. Many blessings. Namaste.